go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let me tell you a little bit about BetOnline. It remains your number one spot for NBA, MLB, MMA, boxing. It doesn't matter. Every single prop, every single play, every single point, it's all at BetOnline. When it comes to bets, when it comes to props, everything that you need is at your headquarters for sports betting. That's BetOnline. Head to the website right now. Use your mobile device. Sign up. Get a 50% welcome bonus. Don't forget to use the promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to get yourself a 50% welcome bonus. Come on, there's no need to hesitate. Bet online, where the game starts.
I hope you're ready to have your mind blown with the greatest health and fitness information on the planet.
Yes, bitch!
Today on the show, I'm really excited to welcome a guest who is incredibly motivational. She's an inspiring woman that has achieved, I mean, look, the internet is full, literally chock full of amazing, jaw-dropping, gives you goosebumps transformations. I honestly can't think of one that is more impressive and more astounding than my guest today. Maybe Caitlyn Jenner. That's a pretty crazy, that was jaw-dropping, that transformation. But this transformation is equally, if not more so. And I would like to welcome her. She is the at the Iron Giantess on that their Instagram. And her name is Laura Miccetich. I always fuck this up.
Miccetich, so close. No, Miccetich. You're doing great.
Because I said, I think I told you a while back that I had a dude I grew up with who's spelled it the exact same way, and he said Miccetich. So it's either way. The Iron Giantess has joined us.
Hi, guys.
Thank you for being on the show. We'll get into like the whole history of you and your application to fitness. But I was actually thinking about it on the way over here to do the show, how when something is very personal to you, it can affect you in a disproportionately either harmful or positive way. My point being, like last night, I was at the gas station I was in line at the gas station. I was gonna buy chewing tobacco and shit. A lady in front of me was so fucked up on meth, like really fucked up. I mean, her pupils were gone and she had sores all over her body. She was so rail skinny. And it was just something about that just fucking floored me. I was trying to hide myself tearing up because she turned around and she said, have a good day. And the way she smiled at me, it just tore me up inside because I was like, I looked at her and I was like, I know how much you're suffering. And I wanted to know if you have some similarity when how you look at people who are overweight and you can just totally connect with both the social suffering, the physical suffering, everything because of where you come from.
Yeah, absolutely. Now my space is more of the counseling space. So I really work with the mental health and the mindset that goes into the blocks and the protection mechanism that is weight. And for me, a lot of the times what I'm seeing is a young woman who was essayed, or you know, you're seeing somebody who struggled with an autoimmune issue as a young child, or really had some feeling of lack of safety in their body and the weight protected them. So when I'm having a conversation with somebody and I can just see that in their eyes, I can see that most of the time weight is not there subconsciously because you're lazy. And that's the hardest thing to deal with, is that it's the first thing people see. So there are people that are just getting daily this confirmation that they're not a good enough person to be fit. But then you have to go into that background of what's making them feel unsafe in their body and unconnected from their body. And I mean, the overlaps between addiction, because I have my own struggles with things, but the overlaps of addiction and dysregulation and lack of safety in the body are startling. So when I'm really having one of those conversations and someone opens up and is willing to create that space for me to have a conversation, it is the most beautiful, profound thing. But it's also really hard to witness that amount of pain in people on the street who are genuinely so kind and so happy and usually the most giving people to other people. But to themselves, there's something that says, I don't deserve this. And that's hard for me to reconcile, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, do you have any tips? Because I think that there's a lot of crossover too with drug and alcohol addiction, in that oftentimes, you know, when I go to meetings and stuff, you're talking about some of the nicest, most considerate, most generous people, but myself included, have a very horrible self-image and almost feel like we deserve that self-flagellation. And do you have any kind of tips, or at least anecdotal stuff, that helped you in making that transition and dealing with it in a more direct way?
Yeah, I think that mentality is really the, I wouldn't hit a fly, but I'd kill myself. Mm. That's sort of how I look at it, is you're the kindest person, but there's something in you that says that everyone deserves kindness except for me. And one of my first tips is now, years later, looking back and doing all of the work that I've done on myself and with others, is nervous system regulation. That's my first spot that I go to, whether I'm dealing with somebody who is going through PTSD or is dealing with addiction issues or is dealing with the coping and numbing mechanisms that come around sedentary lifestyle and binge eating and things like that. Getting the awareness to recognize that you're actually just dysregulated in your body and your surroundings and overwhelmed and over-triggered, and then finding that safety in your body that's been lacking over time, can make a world of difference. So that's, you know, the woo-woo stuff of getting in a cold plunge and going to therapy and just discussing things. But also it's, you know, working on your vagus nerve, doing breath work, meditating, being willing to sit in that dysregulation and let it pass through you and find that connection with your body. Movement is such a cure, such an amazing way to handle that as well, because you're disconnected, especially if you're living a sedentary lifestyle. You're completely disconnected from the signals your body is sending. And the more you ignore those signals, whether it's with addiction or it's with your health and wellness, the louder your body screams. So people forget that if you're not listening at all to what your body needs, it is screaming at you all the time. And so is the entire world around you. So it's like a little kid that's scared, that's being screamed at all the time. And of course you're overwhelmed. And of course you're dysregulated. Going into any journey with of, I need to be perfect today to be worthy of this change, is huge. Because I think we put so much weight on needing to be the version of us, the identity that we want to be tomorrow,
right
now. And it doesn't work that way. You don't jump step. You have to really find what I call grace in the gray. You have to learn to self-regulate, you have to do regulation work, and you have to find grace in the gray on those days where you're doing your best to show up as that version of yourself, even if it falls short of perfection.
Yeah, that fake it till you make it is real. It's just so hard to regulate. Meaning, like, I think everything you said was profound and beautiful, and I support it 1,000,000%. But also, there's a bunch of people, especially kids nowadays. I don't want to say kids, that's denigrating, but younger people under 30. There's so much of this, like, I'm a 10, I'm boss bitch, regardless of the fact that they dropped out of high school, they have a 200 credit and they're 50 pounds overweight. Everything's about, like, I'm the best and I feel that way. Like, how do you make heads or tails of legitimate, healthy self-esteem and delusion?
Yeah. Well, I think there is this pressure to really perform in the outside world. And you can lie as much as you want to the outside world about your confidence. And I totally believe in fake it till you make it, because I seemed like the most confident person in the world when I was 340 pounds. I looked like I owned shit and I loved it, but I was miserable. And that was part of that dysregulating sensation, is that you know that what you're putting out there isn't authentically what you're feeling. So getting really clear on what you're feeling and honoring those instead of just pushing them away. And that's not just sitting in a puddle of your own despair, but it's acknowledging that a lot of times being with the plus size movement and the really body positivity movement, I'm all on board for it. I love the confidence side of it, but also being aware of the fact that your knees hurt and it sucks to walk and you're exhausted, and getting off the couch to get the remote hurts. If your body is hurting, you're hurting. So you can still be wildly confident and be focused on being in your body in the best way that you can and taking care of your body in a way that isn't, I want to get on a cover of a magazine. I mean, it's just, I want to feel good and I want my body to feel good. You're on the same team. You're not fighting against each other. And that's a great place to start when it comes to confidence in your body, if you're struggling with your weight, because a lot of times you've been fighting like hell to feel okay in your body. And that's a hard thing to let go of. So you don't have to. You're just protecting your body and taking care of it.
And sometimes, I mean, a lot of times, I'll be the first to admit, with myself included, your body may visually look amazing and you're still not comfortable in it. You know, I mean, I don't think that there's any real direct right. correlation to like maybe being magazine ready and feeling good in your skin. They're two kind of mutually exclusive exercises that you got to go through.
Exclusively different. The skinny, I feel great. I mean, I was a pro coach, so I know that when you look your best, you usually feel your worst.
Oh, yeah.
So it's all figuring out where your body actually feels good and then settling there and really learning to take care of it. If you can learn to take care of your body instead of subject it to what you think it needs to look like, you'll change your life. Everyone's life would change if that was their only core driving force.
Yeah, it is weird. I think I'm glad you said that. It is strange how, and I'm sure social media and things have a lot to do with it, but the highest levels of bodybuilding and physique competitors, it always was a endeavor of health for 80 years. And then somewhere around like the 80s, that changed where they took like a fork in the road. And then lately in the last 5 years, it's become, they're complete. I mean, where it's like, want to look amazing? Okay, you're dead at 35. Like, it's really gotten divided. What was your take on that? Because I'm sure you're someone who is very committed to health, and I know that. But you're also someone who had to make an incredible transformation to change the way they looked, and I'm sure there was a lot of motivation to maybe do things to get that to happen that might not necessarily be the healthiest. How did you kind of deal with that?
Well, I would say I am very committed to health now, but I was so desperate to reach that finish line too, just like so many of us are. And I have gone through, I struggled with eating disorders for most of my life. And then through a lot of my journey when I was younger and just getting started, I struggled with bulimia, I struggled with anorexia, I struggled with taking substances to stay smaller and suppress my appetite. And those are things I talk about really openly because I think I wasn't happy. A lot of times we think we're going to get to that finish line and feel our leanest and thinnest and everyone's going to love me and I'm going to feel great. And it doesn't work like that. And it doesn't work like that with the bodybuilders either, because a lot of the guys that I would work with, we'd get them on the stage and they're suffering from insomnia. Their moods are all over the place. They're starving, but they're not eating. They leave with a massive eating disorder. The number of clients and amazing athletes who have won huge, huge bodybuilding awards that left stage and my job was to keep them from sinking into a binge eating disorder, that was my end goal with our athletes. I did that. Aftercare was all I cared about. Watching women, I mean, we have the Ozempic craze right now. We have all of these people that are so focused on the thin is in crackhead 90s energy that's louder than ever, but people can't really hear it because they're not noticing it, but it's coming. It is so hard when society says, if you look a certain way, you'll be accepted. But most of the tools that we have stunt your connection with your body and stunt your ability to check if you're healthy. So all of these mechanisms are changing our brains to not be able to know when our body is in distress. And we're normalizing it as a society. Oh, it's normal that you're starving. That's part of being on a calorie deficit and eating 1,000 calories. And it's normal that you're roid raging because you're taking different products that are supposed to make. I was a high school teacher and I'm watching my high schoolers take unregulated stacks and cycles with no knowledge around them. And I'm just watching people get further and further away from being connected with their body and actually feeling good in it. Because what you're doing is you're creating you're unsafe in your body. And the less safe you feel, the more you're going to get that anxiety and panic. And it's not just going to be your body. And the hardest reality is when you reach your goal and you hate yourself more, you're just going to implode.
You're like, what was all this work for? See a lot of guys deal with it. You get to middle age and around my age in your mid 40s, and you work your whole life to be successful. And now you're fucking stinking rich and you worked your ass off to get it. And you're still either not as happy or not as happy as you assumed. And you're like, well, everything I've done, I was like, I'm going to be so happy when I have a Bentley and a mansion. And you're like, I do, and I'm very unhappy, you know? And you see it a lot in Hollywood, too, unfortunately. Okay.
That's a space I really love talking about because we see that all. This stress doesn't just apply to people changing their bodies. It applies to anyone running the rat race, chasing a success that keeps them dysregulated, exhausted, overworked, disconnected from their body. And you see that with retirees. You see that with people who have worked their whole life in a profession only to retire and realize, what did I do this for? And you see it with people who run the rat race trying to get their dream body.
Yeah.
And think, what was I doing? And if you're not doing the mental work behind it, I'm sorry. It sucks. It's going to suck forever until you really face what you're running from.
And I think a lot of it too, tell me what you think, because I actually feel weird sometimes giving people advice on, but if they're a skinny fat guy, I feel very comfortable because I was like, I was just an average dude. I had no muscle and I wasn't fat, but I was not impressive when I took my shirt off and I wanted that and I worked hard and I got it. Let me help you. But when someone's over 100 pounds overweight, I go like, I feel awful trying to sit here and tell you what you should or shouldn't do, because I don't know what it's like to be in your skin. I don't. Tell me, like, I feel like the motives for why you do it play a big role. When I was 19, I wanted to be buff because I wanted to be impressive to chicks.
Yeah.
When I was 40, I got to this weird position. I can't claim that it was any type of like effort on my part. I do meditate, I do seek therapy and all that, and I go to my 12 step stuff, but there wasn't any outward push by my estimation. But I got to this point where I was like, no, I'm doing this for fucking me. I'm doing this for me because it makes me feel amazing and I feel better about myself. And then everything just started to become easier for me. And I wonder, like, if you're doing it because, like, your husband left you and you feel bad about yourself. So, like, I'm going to train and I'm going to lose weight and I'm going to take Ozempic and I'm going to... I don't think that gets you to as much of a happy place if you're like, you know what? I'm tired of not liking myself and I'm going to go and I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah, I think... Here's the thing. Your why can change. And so that's a beautiful and releasing feeling for a lot of people who started their journeys that from a place that wasn't about themselves. Mm-hmm. You can start from a shitty place. I started because my boyfriend left me and I was writing my own story and I hated the story I was in. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I had a whole bunch of time on my hands because I'd given everything to the relationship and uprooted my life. And that's what happened. And I started from a place of spite almost. And then it became so fun that I fell in love with it. And then I started working with pro bodybuilding. And again, I came from a place of I'm not enough. I'm doing this for other people. And I circled back to that why. And then I left pro bodybuilding and I found more of an excitement and joy in movement. And that's been really relieving. But you don't have to have started from a good place to get to a good place. It's the awareness. Like right now, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, now that I think about it, I kind of feel like a douchebag. I picked all of this stuff and I changed my entire life and I'm not happy and I did it for all the wrong reasons. Do it. Start looking at yourself right now from that place of why would I do this if I cared about myself? Why would I do this if it felt good? And if you're happy and things feel good, you will look better, you will feel better, and that resonates way more than anything you're doing for outside approval. I think being willing to just be in the now and pivot from where you are, your journey is not wasted because you did it for the wrong reasons. Right. But a lot of the techniques that you used when you were willing to, you know, I won't hurt a fly, but I'll kill myself.
Yeah.
That mantra in bodybuilding, in weight loss, is so true. The techniques that you're using, if your brain says, I'll do anything for this, stop it. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
If you're willing to die on this cross and just like run yourself into the ground and not eat and take substances, you do you. And when you're ready to wake up, that's fine. We'll all be here. But if you can wake up right now, it'll change your life.
And by the way, if you're willing to die for it, if you're willing to take the drugs, if you're willing to have maybe compromising surgeries so that you can be attractive to the opposite sex, let me be very clear. If you have to do that to attract a certain guy, ladies or gay dudes, if you have to do that to attract a certain girl, lesbians and straight guys, that's not the right person. Like, agreed. Let me be very clear. That there's no way that that's going to be a healthy connection long term, because someone who is in it for you, like, believe me, you don't have to go through any of that shit. You know what I'm saying?
And all those insecurities that you had in that former version of yourself are right there. That's the thing people forget. You carry your weight like a blanket around you for the rest of your life until you're ready to deal with that shit. So it's all going to come up. Even if you trick somebody into bed, at some point, the insecurities that you're carrying around your worthiness are going to cause a problem, and you're going to have to.
Yeah, and it's really hard to say this as a straight guy, but yeah, I was a very successful bachelor, especially when I got on TV and I was like 28 and I had already been married. I got out of a marriage and I'm single for the first time in my adult life, and now I'm on TV and I have money. I did bang everyone. Any girl I spent any reasonable amount of time with, I had sex with, and that's awesome. But at the same time, I did feel awful. I mean, it did. I feel weird saying this as a straight guy because I probably would go back in time and do it all the same. But I felt empty and weird. It's not like it wasn't some panacea that made me feel better about myself, you know?
Absolutely. It's like going into, listen, you go to a bar, you get a lot of compliments from the guys, you look great. Maybe you make out with a stranger, you're feeling on top of your game, but you still leave thinking, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
Like nobody leaves those situations and those interactions thinking, well, that confirms that I'm amazing. Yeah. They just leave thinking like, what? Subconsciously, you're thinking, how the hell did I think that was going to make me feel better? And that doesn't mean you can't slang and bang. Like, you can go out and do your thing. But if that is about filling an emptiness, just like your issues with substance are about filling an emptiness, or your issues with food are about going home and filling an emptiness, that means you're feeling empty. And dick doesn't really fix that.
And you're not supposed to, by the way. Like, you're not really, this is news to people. If you're feeling empty, if you're trying to engage in things to make you feel less empty, you're already lost. Like, something's wrong and there needs to be a complete rehaul. You don't need to change the carburetor on the engine. You need to buy a new car.
Get out of the car and fucking walk, yes, man.
Humans are not supposed to feel empty. You're supposed to feel worthwhile. Like, there's a purpose.
That's such a hard thing, though. Yeah. I mean, as I was working in counseling, and for years, I was still able to talk to people and help them get through things, but I felt empty too. And I mean, those were some of my darkest days when I realized I've done all of this work and I don't know why I don't feel okay. I don't know. Not in my skin. Like, I feel confident. I'm doing fine in the dating department. Everything's all good. But I still feel like something's broken inside of me and I need to get in there and find it. And I think that's also the recognition that you're telling yourself there's a piece of you deep in there, back in the closet, that you're hiding, that you're going to find or someone else is going to find, and boom, you're going to be a terrible person, is bullshit. Because once you get in there and you tinker around, almost always there's nothing wrong with you except what you're saying to yourself.
It's the narrator in your head.
Yeah, the narrator. Right. You've got a flawed narrator. And
it's weird, though. I do believe in the do as I say, not as I do, though. Because as you were saying, you were working in mental health field, still feeling empty and broken and all that. Some of the best advice, some of the most meaningful advice I've ever gotten from addicts were from people who are actively using, who are dead, you know, because they're like, listen, I know I'm going to go hit the pipe. I know I'm going to the bar. But let me tell you, the amount of pain I'm in, the amount of, you know, I don't think that there's, it always bothered me. It always bothered me when, like, especially in country music, you'd see some new star would hit the scene and they're like, she's from New York City. I was like, she
doesn't know pain.
She feels country. She wants to be a country star. You don't have to be from Kingston, Jamaica to be a reggae star. You don't have to be from Nashville to be a country star. And I don't think you have to be fully put together to give people meaningful advice, you know, when it comes to.
I also think a lot of times we're more put together than we give ourselves credit for because of the narrator.
Yeah.
Like if the narrator just took a freaking seat for a minute, a lot of us would be okay. And I mean, I say that as somebody who randomly stumbled into one of the darkest times of my life when I thought I had it figured out. So it's not crazy to take advice from someone who's been there, someone who is there, because most of the time, all that they're doing is saying, I'm feeling a lot of pain and I would never wish that on you. So here's what I can give you to try to help. And I think that goes back to people who are overweight, helping not people who are underweight, never really relating to people who are going through the struggles of obesity.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. No, that's a very good analogy.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new day disinfecting wipes conveniently tackle surfaces, including remotes, tablets, and smartphones, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
I correct me if I'm wrong, but I have to assume when you're, because also for those of you who don't know, go check out, again, it's at The Iron Giantess on Instagram. I will put up all the links and everything, make sure. But not only are you someone who's made an incredible transformation with your body, but you're very tall for a woman. So it probably was even more overwhelming to see, especially in like junior high school and stuff. It must have been really socially difficult, because not only are you overweight, but you're like 6 feet tall. Which, like, both of those, you know, are ways to get made fun of when you're a kid, especially a girl.
I took up too much space was sort of the.
Yeah, and that was a comment. And was it hard for you when, because, and I'm being very, I'm not saying this to butter you up, or and I'm not trying to be a locker room guy, but you're really hot. You're a very attractive girl. So I have to make the assumptions that for many years of your life, you got very, you either got no attention or very negative attention from guys. And then now you're getting lots of attention from guys. And I wonder, is there any resentment? Is there any bitterness? And how do you deal with that?
Well, one thing is that I've always gotten along with guys and I've always wanted to be part of the guy gang, which now I'm learning was just bruised femininity and issues around like being a girl and embracing that, because I was 6'1", taller than the guys. And The only way that I could play was to be on the team instead of one of the cheerleaders. So I had wonderful male friendships, and I've been really fortunate to have amazing male and female friendships throughout my life. So the resentment that I felt wasn't this oh, I don't exist. It was the, oh, I'm the best friend in the pocket. And I became the emotional bounce board for all of my guy friends. So I actually got to learn a lot of the ins and outs and really see men beyond the facade of I'm this macho guy who's so hot and I have no feelings. I got to see inside and behind the curtain of really teenage boys who were struggling with their own self-identity. And I learned that really easy and early. And that's probably why I ended up in the field I ended up in, working with kids and then with adults who couldn't really connect with who they really are. But I will say there was definitely, you know, a year after I lost the weight where I was an unstoppable force.
Yeah.
And it was my job to, but that's the thing is when no one, if you think of it like being fed, I spent a lot of my life not being fed and watching other people eat. And like, when I lost the weight, suddenly it became, I was starving. like attention was all that I wanted. I wanted to feel like a woman. I wanted to feel like a girl, and I was getting it from, but I was starving. So I was taking it from anywhere that I could and really having no boundaries for myself around what I needed for care and need. So really it took years for me to reconcile that I deserved a certain level of kindness and treatment and empathy, and that not everyone needed access to my energy. And I'm not just talking about in bed. I'm just saying in general, those interactions, I spent a lot of time dealing with a lot of douchebags because they said I was pretty.
Right.
And I think that's pretty relatable for a lot of women who have struggled with their weight. It's like, I'll take anything I can get until one day you remember you're not worthless and you deserve to have some standards. And then all men are screwed.
Yeah. And I think like that's where, Lord, what the fuck do I know? I mean,
I love it. Everything you say where you're like, I'm a man. And then you're like, okay, but that's accurate.
Thank you. I appreciate it. But I'm also like a caveman. I mean, I have one child and she's a daughter, so I'm very sensitive. And I was essentially, my parents are still together, but I was raised by women because my sister, I only have one sibling and she's 11 years older than me. And my mom was there in the household. And my dad traveled a lot for work. So I was like woman happy household. But I think that like what you just said was that then men are screwed when a woman gets a real sense of her value. That's where real actual positive movement and femininity and feminism is coming into play. And I don't see that from a lot of the vocal women online trying to give this the posturing of like, I'm a boss bitch and like, I don't need no man. And it's like, wait.
Well, if you have to scream it, you probably don't mean it.
Right. Right.
This like, cause you're not out there trying to make other people feel worthless because you feel good.
Yeah.
You're just out there saying, yeah, I appreciate it, but that's not enough for me. That's not what I'm looking for. And it's kindness goes a long way, no matter who you're interacting with.
And I really, this is my general concern for women, straight women particularly, because I think it's a weird nuanced thing for lesbians. But for straight women right now with this rather confusing and nebulous world of feminism and empowerment, my concern is that they are going to think that in order to enact this empowerment that they have to be like this enacting of a boss bitch thing, and I'm gonna stack up bodies and you can't slut shame me. But in reality, the guys out there that are going to recognize their true value and give them the respect that they deserve, they're gonna pass over for the guy who has the fuckboy jeans and abs, who's gonna treat her like shit. And it's just gonna be another one of those guys that ends up digging the hole deeper, you know?
Yeah, I actually, from the woman of the world, I will tell you that I think the danger now is that a lot of women who are recognizing that they put themselves not in even energy exchange, is that we're going to see a lot more women self-isolating from the dating pool in general. So we're going to see a lot of women who feel the need to protect themselves by not engaging in relationship. And I think that that's valid, but I also think it's really sad because it's just another amalgamation of I'm scared to really feel the world and I'm really scared to get hurt and I'm going to keep myself back. And the same thing goes for when you're in your fuckboy era of like, this guy can't actually touch me it's the recognition that your fear is making you as you as emotionally unavailable as you're labeling another person. And when you recognize that, you start to go on around intimacy and what you do, real connection. And then you're not missing the guy that's really kind, who really values you and builds you up. But you're also not blurring the lines for him because you're just being yourself versus right. this put on version. I know I wouldn't want somebody acting like an asshole and I have to burrow through all their bullshit to get to this layer of them being kind. You showing up as yourself. And I know that's hard to say and it sounds crazy, but to me, that sounds absolutely easy. Like, just take it or leave it. I'm going to dance around the room. I'm going to do my own thing. And I'm really excited to meet you. And I think you're wonderful. And let's see what you have to offer, because it's equally as valid as what I do.
It is.
But like, if you suck, get the fuck out.
Please bounce. But I wonder, yeah, because you're right. But it's easy for me to say, too, to a 21-year-old guy who's confused about the dating life. It's easy for me to say, just be yourself, dude. Because I'm 45 years old, and I don't give a fuck.
I mean, I really,
I'm married. I have a life. I don't care. It's very easy for me to be myself now. It was fucking excruciatingly impossible when I was 21 years old, you know? And so
I mean, part of the problem there is that we don't give them time to learn who they are. Part of fucking up is figuring out who you are. So like there's a grace period around you being a dumbass. All of us, we've all been dumbasses. So like, it's not the shaming of you're in your dumbass era. It's like, you're just figuring yourself out. And I think we have to give people grace for that too.
Yeah, that's good advice. And I think it's really hard when everyone's life, especially young people, their life's lived online. You know, there was a certain level of privacy with my fucking up. You know, when I was 20, I could fuck up in private. And I don't know how much kids have that liberty now. All right. It's really, again, and I'm saying this out of sincere respect, your physical transformation, your emotional and psychological transformation, it's astounding. And I think that people everywhere should look at you and your life story and take your advice. At the Iron Giantess is where you can find her on Instagram. And then that'll dovetail into other things that Laura has to offer. Let's get down to the brass tacks of the transformation itself now. I mean, because I'm sure there's a lot of women in particular that might be listening to this. And that, by the way, that's something I really pride myself on, is that I was looking at analytics the other day. I have a lot of female viewers and listeners. And for a meathead kind of show, that means a lot to me, because my whole goal when I started this show was I wanted to make a show that someone who's like stage ready, all the drugs, they're going to die from all the drugs they're pumping into their body, but they're stage ready and shredded, would find interesting. But someone who's never exercised in their life would be like, okay, I feel comfortable listening to this show. So it makes me feel good knowing that there's women, especially women above 30, that are listening to the show. That being said, where do you start? Let's say you're a woman, you're not happy with your appearance, you're overweight. From you, as someone who went through an almost insurmountable amount of weight loss and came out the other end, where you begin and what are some principles that you can impart to the people listening?
Fuck the all or nothing lifestyle. This whole mentality that you have to hit every nail on the head every single day to succeed is only going to lead to you falling off. So what I like to say is, make a list of things that you want to improve. And that is, you really, the first thing you do is, in 5 years, when I don't have the weight, how do I want to live my life? I want to be eating a certain way. I want to be drinking water. I want to be going on hikes and walks. I want to be playing sports with my buddies. All of those things are going to inform how you show up in the beginning of your journey, if you're willing to look at it. So recognizing that you getting closer to that goal is literally you just doing that every day. And I mean, I literally have it tattooed over my body all over, that every single day, when you wake up, you're just choosing to live as that version of you who doesn't see this as impossible. And that doesn't mean that you succeed every day. And I say that as somebody who struggled with eating disorders, and some nights it'd be a perfect day and I wouldn't recognize that my day was shitty emotionally and my go-to coping mechanism is food. So being really kind to yourself, it's hard. It's really fucking hard to be kind to yourself along the way. But if you can separate the the critic in your mind and really look at how fucking hard you're trying every day and give yourself that credit, you will move a lot further, a lot faster. Because most of what we're dealing with is the self-sabotage and the narrative that makes us implode for no reason other than that in that moment, we don't feel safe that we can accomplish this.
Yeah.
So all or nothing is a recipe for disaster, and small steps forward really will get you a lot further than you think.
And patience and sustainability, right? Because
absolutely.
Even if you could be 140 pounds overweight, as you were, am I estimating right? It was 150 some?
I think it's about 180 now, but
holy
yeah.
Mackerel. That's fucking amazing. You know what?
I hate that number because I want to be allowed to go up or down 10 pounds and sure. not talk about it. But sure, yeah, but it's around there.
I will tell you this. Like, I'm leaner and more muscular than 99% of the globe, right? But I have those points when it'll be winter and after Christmas, and I look at myself and I'm like, this 10 pounds is insurmountable. It seems impossible. So I can't imagine what it must have felt like to look in the mirror at 180 pounds overweight and go like, nope, may not be tomorrow, but I'm doing this, and to just power through. Yeah. It's fucking amazing.
Well, and the other thing that people forget if they've never been morbidly obese is that it fucking hurts. Like, it hurts to do anything. So people forget that we all are just like lose the weight, but every day, if your body is killing you to stand up out of a chair, asking someone to go do barbell squats it sounds impossible. So that's why I always encourage, especially the further away you are from your goal, the gentler you can be with yourself, because what you're doing is you're really creating safety in that movement and creating normalcy in it. And then as you start moving, your body will take over. Like, it will be excited. And the only thing that will really stop you is the narrative in your head saying you don't deserve it. And right. when you hear that, you just notice it's there. You don't have to change it.
One thing I always try to let people know, and this is not just for overweight people. This is for scrawny guys or old people. People who don't have fit into the demographic that's normally going to be going to a gym. There's this idea, a very false idea, that really ripped fitness chicks and really jacked dudes are judging you. And in my experience, the more fit and the more fit the clientele, the less you will be judged, and the more, A, because they're so into themselves. but B, if you've accomplished that, you've put in the work, you've earned your stripes, and you recognize that you kick ass just for walking in the doors today. Like, and I think like the big beefy muscle heads and the ripped chicks are very intimidating to beginners. And I always try to impart, I was like, it's actually quite the opposite. The most judgmental people are usually the people that can't do it themselves. And I wonder if that's been your experience.
Absolutely. I have never found kinder people. Well, okay. When I started, my biggest fear was that people were going to judge my size. Mm-hmm. And I do not want to invalidate that thought, because the truth is, when I lost the weight, I found out a lot of people were betting against me. Yeah. So that's, I think when we act like nobody's looking, that's invalidating. But at the same time, when I started going to real bodybuilding gyms, I started going to spaces, I realized that in there, just like you said, that wasn't there, because their demons, the people who look great, their demons are usually really loud and they can't even hear yours. And what's so triggering for a lot of people who aren't in the shape they want to be in is walking in and being the exception to the rule, because your physicality is the first thing people see. It's like you're wearing your insecurity on a board, whether that's I'm really skinny or that's I'm 300 pounds overweight. It feels like you're a walking billboard of your insecurities. But when you walk in there, it is really a church. Like, it is old guys at 85, 70 years old who have been lifting weights since, you know, back in the day. And then there's people struggling with things you can't hear, but they're in there and they're fighting like hell to survive. And so are you. And so when we see somebody in there who is there, the thing that you need to know is that you being there as the exception to the rule makes everybody so fucking proud of you. You are fighting for something we can see. That's a battle we can identify. And when you see that and you're fighting inner battles that are quiet, and you see somebody who's out there on the front lines fighting a battle we can all see, most of the people in a gym, in a real gym, who are really there for the right reasons, are going to be backing you like no other. So I always say, if the first person you go to get advice from is the juice head who's jacked, who looks like you shouldn't talk to him. It's the power lifter who's, you know, rack pulling 700 pounds. It's the girl who looks like, maybe not the girl on the cardio equipment all the time, but go up to a girl who looks like she's actually doing the work and killing it. And she's in the zone.
The muscle babes, honestly, the muscle babes are all usually more, they're more healthy mentally and physically than the, like, you know, the runway model looking chick, you know.
Right. I mean, some of those girls are there because, you know, they're about to fucking crush it on the tennis court and they're playing, you know, like, I love that too. But I just think there's so many people in there who, the scarier they look, the more demons they've fought to get there. And that means that your demons are valid in their eyes. And I think that's really cool. And you won't find a better sense of camaraderie. There's nothing cooler. Like, I see you, and what the fuck can I do to help you?
Yeah, I agree completely. Like, I was talking, I forgot who I was talking to, but it was an old schooler, you know, in that like Southern California bodybuilding scene. And I said, there was something magical that happened to me when I was young and I made the decision I wanted to get into bodybuilding and like lifting weight and like taking care of myself, right? So I go to the gym, and this is Gold's Gym in Pasadena. And I remember meeting these dudes, Doug Brignoli and like the Mike O'Hearn, and I had this vision, I think like the general public did, that they were like dumb buff guys. And I'm sure those guys exist, but these guys, they were like the first time for a young kid I saw guys who really had their shit together. And like you said, they were so wrapped up in their own stuff that they were battling, they didn't have any opportunity even, I think, to judge other people. They were like, young boy that wants to pump iron, that's awesome. You want a spot? Let me give you some advice. Let me help you. And it was like exhilarating, you know? It was really kind of fun. And like,
nobody killing it has time to think about how to make fun of you.
Yeah. And by the way, nobody who, and that, by the way, that's a really good point. Nobody who's killing it has time to make fun of you. That goes for like all facets of life. If you are someone who's starting your own podcast, you got a YouTube channel, you're the first person in your little small community that's going to college, and you're doing something, right? You're putting yourself out there and it's scary. And then people are shitting on you. It's going to happen. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, and I'm not the most successful guy in the world. I'm not the most experienced, but I've been around the block enough to know winners that I've been around, they've never made a negative comment on YouTube. Ever. It's never once happened. I've never been around a guy who's killing it, that is shredded, who's gone to the chat room and been like, your fucking legs are small. Yeah, you may have good delts, but your calves look like shit. No, none of my buddies that
How about some calves, though? No, I'm just kidding.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that there's it's important to point out that you're going to have a lot of detractors, especially now, way worse than ever before with the internet. You're going to have detractors. You're going to have people that are going to chip away at you and they're going to bring you down. Whether you're famous, whether you're not, just trying to do stuff, you're going to have people that are going to shit on you. And science kind of shows a really small, infinitesimal percentage of those people are worth listening to.
Agree. I mean, angry people do angry things. Yeah. And most of the time, what you're doing is you're taking a step. It doesn't mean that they want to do what you do, but it does mean that you doing something is making them feel stuck.
Yeah.
In whatever area they're miserable in. And that's pretty empowering when you recognize somebody else is pissed off because you showed them that there's a room for them to move and they're not moving.
I think like you've given a lot of really inspiring and really good advice, and it's no surprise to me that you do that for a living now. What do you have to say? I'm not necessarily talking to teenage or early college age guy. I'm talking about like my man Georgie over here, you know, like late 20s, 30s, early 30s, where you're putting your life together and you're doing it and you're grinding. And the dating scene now, is so weird and it's so hard. What do you say to straight guys out there from a woman who is A, beautiful, but B, also deserves respect, deserves the attention to her worth? What do you say to the guys out there who maybe are commensurate in deserving worth and but want to meet a girl like you?
Yeah, I think if you're clear on the fact that you really do want to meet somebody who doesn't just make fill that void and make you feel less insecure for the night, and then you're going to move on to the next one, but you're really looking for a partner. One thing is that everybody's just scared. Everybody's really scared to get hurt. And so are you. And that means that a lot of times it's going to take bravery from both of you to be able to make a good relationship work. And most of that is vulnerability. It's not stupidity, but it's vulnerability, willingness to be clear on what you're looking for. If a guy who is successful and kind isn't out there slinging dick, he's just like, hey, I'm looking for a partner. I think a lot of us would really benefit from saying openly, I'm actually looking for my partner and I'm not really looking for anything beyond, like, I'm not really settling for that. That doesn't mean you're my partner. It doesn't mean that this dinner is going to be the thing we talk about at our wedding, but it does mean that I'm here really testing to see if this is something legitimate and I'm not into the games. And I think for men, it's my girlfriends and I say this all the time. It is very easy to realize how you can play a high value woman. You know what to say. Oh, she's looking for commitment. She's not really fucking around. If you don't have those feelings towards somebody, whether you're the girl or the guy, the first thing you can do is letting somebody go when they're not your person is huge. And I truly believe you can kind of get the zip zaps when you're like, oh, this one's worth sticking around and seeing how it goes. But if it's not worth it, get the fuck out of the way, because that person is worth it to somebody else, girl or guy.
Yeah, somewhere, someplace. Yeah.
Yeah, just like being genuine and authentic with your intentions. And I mean, the rest of it falls into place or it doesn't. And validating that the amount of time you spend with somebody, whether it ends in your partnership being lifelong or not, had validity and was good, and that your intention is never to hurt the other person.
Yeah, then there's a real problem.
Yeah,
like there's a real problem. I just can't wait to hurt someone today. This is my big.
There's a lot of angry people out there.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of sociopaths in Washington D.C. and Hollywood that like hurting people. So okay, last question for you, so I can let you get about your day. And I really do appreciate you joining me today.
Always, I'll be here every day.
We talked about Some company will remain nameless, did that, put us together to host a podcast. And
it was too much for them.
And then just said, nah, flew me out to Venice, brought her. We sat down. We did professional camera team. We had a set. And I'm like, oh, well, this is my whole life's taken care of, because this is going to be fucking huge. And then just, by the way, didn't go, it turns out it's going to cost more money than we anticipated. No, they're just like, we'll just not call them back. We'll just never call them. And I'm like, wait, what the fuck? I put shit on hold for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They saw it before we did.
So last question before I let you go is, we at the very beginning of the show, we were talking about like the similarities with extreme weight loss and then drug and alcohol addiction, or extreme obesity and drug and alcohol addiction. And almost always there's a history of trauma, sexual abuse or something that is leading to that, because every one of us has had the, oh man, you know what? I need to do it for some, I've really let myself go at 10 or 20 pounds overweight. To get over 100 pounds overweight, there's something beyond that, right? And it bothers me when I see like the Biggest Loser type stuff where it's like, well, let's just sweat it out. And it's like, no, there's some serious stuff we need to discuss, right? Same thing with drugs. It's not like, well, you're just lazy. You just have no willpower. You got to put the booze down. It's like, no, there's serious, profound problems here. This person drinks, you know, like God rest his soul, the guy from Smash Mouth, Steve Harwood, his liver gave out at 50. Like, this is not like he's just got to cut back on the booze. This is serious traumatic stuff that's going on. My take has always been, when people ask me my advice, is it's like your house being on fire. Down the line, you can get to the bottom of why your house caught on fire. But while it's on fire, put the fucking fire out. Because, you know, if you're drinking a pint of whiskey every night, Duval, if you're drinking an 18-pack every night when you get home from work, if you're using cocaine or meth every day, like, I'm sure there was probably some abuse in your past or a childhood thing. But first, we got to deal with the daily cocaine use, right? Do you have the same feeling?
No.
Do you have the same feeling with obesity, or do you think that there can be more of a symbiotic approach to deal with the mental, lose the weight at the same time?
Oh, I think that waiting until you figure yourself out to start treating yourself better is a recipe for disaster, because you can't do one without the other.
Nice. Okay.
So getting yourself to a place where you're like, okay, I can't love this for, I can't even find it. For me, trying to find my traumas took another 7 years. I knew they were there, and I honored them, but really waiting until you're cured to cure yourself makes
zero sense.
No sense.
Yeah.
You, like, it makes no sense. That I have access to is that I am unhappy and unsafe and I'm treating myself poorly. What can I do to change that? You will figure out, fingers crossed, how to love yourself during that process with a lot of trial and error and a lot of hiccups, but you'll figure it out. You will never figure it out if you wait. That's this magic solution is like, oh, well, when I heal my trauma, then this will, all this weight will fall off. Part of losing the weight is healing the trauma that you're dealing with in that identity. It is crucial to changing your life. And that's part of why the quick fix, I'm just going to take a drug and it's all going to fall off or whatever, you're going to hit that wall so much faster, because there's no, there, the inner work of, I am learning to love myself and this version of myself, regardless of the narrative that I have in my head. That is the transformation. And that's what lets you get deeper into that shadow work and into those versions of yourself. I can't stand when if I waited to fix myself, I'd still be 340 pounds, but I'd probably be dead.
Right. No, that's and same with me.
If I waited
to get to the bottom of what was going on internally with me until I stopped doing drugs, I would absolutely be dead. You know, so it's a incredibly
also cool. Your vice and coping mechanism you're using is stopping you from being able to sit in whatever you're feeling. So like if you're jacked up and fucked up, and I speak from experience, like just because you get over one trauma doesn't mean you don't fill it with another. And if you're fucked up and you're out of your mind trying to avoid it, you're never going to get there. And whatever your substance of choice is, it's going to stop you from getting to that place. So it's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, the two have to work in tandem. I think that's incredibly good advice. And I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure you probably became more effective at dealing with the internal the more and more you worked on the external. You know, the more and more the weight loss and the struggle that came with the weight loss, you learned a lot about yourself, you got more self-respect, and that therefore you kind of made yourself a little bit more competent at dealing with the introspective stuff, you know.
You really learn to trust yourself. Because if you can trust yourself when you feel like you suck, learning to trust yourself when you're starting to realize that you're an okay person gets a lot easier.
That is a... It's a shit ton of great advice, and I really, really appreciate you joining me today at The Iron Giantess on Instagram. I have to have you back, because that was like really fantastic. It was really motivating. I have goosebumps listening to it, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening and watching that feel the same way. I asked Laura before the show. She said her Instagram is the best place to catch her, at The Iron Giantess, and that there will be other stuff, amazing things coming soon, and that you will be made aware. So just make sure that you subscribe, you at her, and stay abreast of what's going on in her life. And then thank you again. I hope we could do this soon.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Live life at your pace. Click the banner or go to visitwilliamsburg.com to discover how. Because here in Williamsburg, life moves at one pace, yours. Scramble through our world-class golf courses or shop your way through the square. Be one with nature as you hike or bike through our parks and trails, or hunker down at one of our breweries. And when it's time to eat, be sure to bite into our eclectic food scene. It's all waiting for you in Williamsburg. Book your trip today and live life at your pace.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll be inviting everyone over. From barbecues to girls' night, the kids can even host their friends.
Whoa, it smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy, the way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.